Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and we are doing something a little different on this week's show. Starting today, Netflix is a Joke Fest is taking over the city of LA for 12 days straight with hundreds of shows across more than 35 different venues, including a live taping of this very podcast with comedian Mae Martin next Wednesday, May 8th. So instead of interviewing a comedian this week, I am joined by two of my favorite fellow comedy nerds to give you a little preview of the festival and hopefully talk more broadly about how we got to this point where Netflix seemingly dominates the comedy world, for better and occasionally for worse. First up, you know her, you love her, the Daily Beast editor, Allegra Frank, is here.
I love that intro. Thanks. Hi.
And I also want to welcome the writer and podcaster who I only knew for many years as the comics comic, Sean McCarthy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matt. It's great to be here.
So yeah, Sean, I want to start with you. You write a lot about comedy for The Daily Beast as well, and you will be in LA for the very beginning of the festival. I get there a couple days after you. But yeah, I mean, I think the big opening show tonight, as people are hearing this, I believe, is this four headliner show at the Hollywood Bowl that's Jerry Seinfeld, Jim Gaffigan, Nate Bargatze, and Sebastian Maniscalco, four white guys, although from different eras and different areas. So what do you think it says, Sean? I think you'll be at that show that they're opening with those four guys.
Right. It's kind of one of those, you win some, you lose some, having four white guys of different ages. So there's your variety, or not all.
Diverse.
Not,
it's pretty
not
diverse.
All of them are entirely based on Italian ethnic comedy. Some of them are based on food. So let me just make a quick plug for Ellen DeGeneres, who has just started her tour and somehow is not part of this festival.
Yeah, what's that about?
She started her tour this past week, and I think it says volumes that Netflix can be the dominant force in Hollywood, and yet also the place where people who claim they've been kicked out of show business and or canceled get to film Netflix specials, because Ellen's on tour, and she announced she's been kicked out of show business, but she's taping this tour for a Netflix special coming this fall.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah, I mean, I assumed she was going to have a big comeback. I didn't realize that it was going to be on Netflix as well. Yeah, which makes it even more surprising that she's not part of the festival, unless she's going to do some sort of surprise thing, which I guess is possible.
Right. Well, as for the show that you mentioned at the Hollywood Bowl, what strikes me as interesting about this is that these four guys come from different eras of comedy in terms of like what platforms were available to you coming up, right? Sebastian, who's going by one name for a little while, in that period, all of his specials were coming out on Showtime, which for those of you who are young, Showtime used to be a cable network.
Yeah. What is Showtime? Yeah, I remember some channel called Showtime.
But with both Jim Gaffigan and Nate Bargatze, I mean, all four of these guys are arena-level comedians on their own, and together it's amazing to see them all on one show. But what it says to me with both Gaffigan and Bargatze in particular is those two comedians have kind of flittered back and forth with their recent specials from both Netflix to Amazon Prime Video. But even if they're willing to go to like the highest paid bidder per special, they all have to come kind of kowtow to Ted Sarandos and Netflix and pay their respects, bend the knee, as it were.
When I was a kid, I grew up like it was the 50s. Like you would go outside and your parents just didn't know where you were. We went to school and played Oregon Trail on a computer at school. No one had a computer at home. It's like, what are you, a zillionaire? Like, I mean, you could. But then in high school, I had AOL. You know, we had a computer at home. Then I got a beeper and then I got a cell phone. I didn't have social media until I was 26 with MySpace. You know, I mean, social media, like whatever I did in high school is a rumor. It can't ruin my life.
The Ellen DeGeneres point, just to go back to that real quick, I was going to say, I feel like what is the financial benefit of doing something like this versus your own show? I mean, I'm looking and like it is obviously huge names just from that opener alone, right?
Right.
Would you not get paid more to do a larger show in your own audience. Like, I can see her wanting to do it for that reason, but I don't know the economics.
My suspicion is that anyone who's participating in the festival isn't doing it for the money so much as they're doing it to be part of the in-group.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You want to be seen as part of this exclusive club of people. David Spade and Dana Carvey have their podcast Fly on the Wall. And earlier this spring, they had Ted Sarandos on to kind of talk about 10 years of Netflix and comedy. And Spade tells this story about before one of the awards ceremonies, Sarandos invited this crew of like a dozen comedians to his house for a dinner. And they include people who weren't up for awards through Netflix, like people like Sarah Silverman, who's done most of her work with HBO, but they all kind of like convene in this little like super exclusive club of comedians. And so being part of the Netflix is a joke fest for these people isn't about the money so much as it is the status symbol of it. It's like, ooh, look, I'm this.
I mean, Ted Sarandos is such an interesting figure in all of this because he does seem like, you know, he's for anyone who doesn't know, he's, you know, he runs Netflix, but comedy seems to be, from all accounts, his thing. Like, he is very into comedy, and that's why stand-up comedy has become such a big deal on Netflix. Without him, would this have even happened? That, you know, because it started with giving these huge paydays to Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle and all these people, tens of millions of dollars. I don't think that another executive would have made that decision necessarily. And I think it ended up being a pretty good bet, right?
Yeah, I think usually these things happen because there's someone at the top or someone near the top who's really passionate about it.
Yeah. And the other big figure at Netflix, who I think people probably don't know his name, but if you're not like super inside comedy, is Robbie Prah, who really runs the comedy, you know, the section of Netflix and runs their whole comedy scene. And he just did an interview with Vulture that I thought was pretty interesting, where they were sort of asking him, like, what's the goal of this festival? Is the festival supposed to make money, or is it, you know, just a big sort of advertisement for Netflix's comedy as a comedy platform? And he basically admitted, like, yeah, we're not trying to make money with this festival, which to me read as we're going to lose money on this festival, but it's worth it to prop up, you know, this idea of Netflix as this incredibly dominant space. I mean, I want to sort of get into more of this stuff with where Netflix falls in the comedy world soon, but just to keep on the festival for a minute, the other big show that's the night that I get into town in LA from up north that I'm hoping to see Sean at is this roast of Tom Brady, which is significant to me because it's going to be live streaming on Netflix. It's Netflix sort of officially taking over the roasts from Comedy Central, just like snatching it right out from under them. And Comedy Central is obviously, you know, diminished in its position a lot. So this kind of makes sense in some ways. And it's going to be this huge event at the Forum in LA, which is a huge venue, which I've been to some of these tapings of the Comedy Central roasts, and they were in very nice rooms, but they were not in giant arenas like that. So I'm very curious what that's going to be like. And the fact that it's live is significant because these roasts traditionally, again, going to the taping, it'll often go like almost twice as long as what ends up on TV because they end up cutting so much, cleaning stuff up, you know, sometimes giving people a little bit of a boost if they bombed, you know, making it seem not quite as bad as it was in the room. So Sean, for you, I know since you'll be there, what are you expecting from this roast?
Oh man, I'm actually, the difference between this festival and the first Netflix is a Joke Festival 2 years ago is so striking in terms of how they've been able to pivot in their strategy. 2 years ago for their first fest, they recorded a bunch of different showcases and then put them out on Netflix a month later, and I dare you to recall a single one of them.
Yeah.
They were not
memorable.
Yeah, even though, you know, one of them was fronted by Snoop Dogg, another one by Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, one by Amy Schumer, one by Pete Davidson, one by Bill Burr. But they all kind of like flopped and underperformed. This year they've really kind of tackled the strategy of like focusing on a few key things that they know are gonna hit. And this roast is obviously one of them. I mean, yeah, like you said, since Comedy Central got out of the comedy game, there hasn't really, and the Friars Club also closed, by the way, so
right,
there's no longer this place for roasts. Netflix did have a series called Historical Roasts a couple of years ago, but this is more of a throwback to kind of like the Dean Martin era, where you have all of these high-powered comedy stars and athletes and celebrities And the fact that it's live is, wow, I have to give them props for that.
If they pull it off.
Not only for the roast, but also the other main event that they're doing live, which is the night before with Cat Williams, who earlier this year just took over Shannon Sharpe's podcast, Club Shay Shay, and went on a epic 3-hour rampage that Shannon Sharpe could do nothing about. So I have no idea what he's going to do given a live platform on Netflix. Is there going to come a point where Netflix is going to try to tell him to wrap things up and he's just going to keep going?
Well, I guess the good thing about Netflix is like he doesn't have to wrap it up. There's no like, you know, local news coming up to cut it off. It's, you know, it can go as long as they want, but then it will presumably live on Netflix forever. And I am curious whether there will be editing to the version that then lives on Netflix versus what people watch. I remember the Chris Rock special that was live was their first experiment in this. And I do think that they cleaned up some of his fumbling towards the end of that, where he got it. When he started talking about the slap and the Will Smith stuff, he kind of fumbled some jokes. And I believe that in the version that exists now on Netflix, you don't see that, which is interesting.
Yes, it happened. I got smacked like a year ago. Fucking last week, I got smacked in the fucking Oscars by this motherfucker. And people like, did it hurt? It still hurts. I got summertime ringing in my ears. Fucking drums, please.
They can fix it in post.
Yeah, they fix it in post, but you can't do that when it's live. So if you are watching live, that's probably that's an incentive to watch live because you might see something unexpected or that's not perfect. So they haven't announced, as we're talking, the lineup for this roast yet. Maybe when you're listening to this, they will have. I'm not sure if they're planning to do it in advance. I did talk to Nikki Glaser for a podcast episode that's going to be coming out on this feed next week. We talked a lot about her new special, but she did tell me that she is going to be on the dais for the roast, her first one in like, I think a decade or something since she did a bunch of them for Comedy Central. And she told me one other name that's going to be on it, which I'm not allowed to disclose even to you guys and our listeners, but it should be interesting is all I'll say about that. But so that's a little tease, but unless they've announced it already and then it's...
My ears are burning, if not nibbling.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be a high wire act on many levels, and live comedy on TV is in this form is pretty rare these days. So I'm excited to see what happens with that. There's the Cat Williams is live, the roast is live, and then the other big live thing, although I'm not unclear how live it's going to be, is this John Mulaney sort of nightly series that sounds like kind of like a late night show, kind of like a variety show. I'm not sure anyone really knows what it is. But I know, Allegra, you were particularly excited about this one. So have you done any, you know, digging into what this might be or what do you expect it to be?
Yeah, I feel like they're, like with everything else, it seems, they're keeping things pretty close to the vest with their live shows and general lineup. So it's hard to really say what to expect here. I'm very excited and also quite confused. So he's doing six different shows. I guess it's like an overarching John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA is what it's called. And from the trailer, it seems he'll be going out and interviewing various people, I think both real and famous, like surprise guests, just about LA.
Coming to Netflix this May.
Everybody.
Everyone.
Everybody care.
John Mulaney presents Everybody's in LA.
Six live installments of the program.
We're John Mulaney.
Mulaney.
John Mulaney.
He explores the city of Los Angeles.
With his comedian friends.
Featuring people equal to, but not necessarily.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Chris Rock.
And David Letterman.
Yeah, I'm like imagining them like, you know, going to a taco stand. Like, I'm trying to figure out what this is going to be. Like, because it does seem like they're trying to make it out and about. But just the idea, I kind of just want it to be a John Mulaney hosted late night show just because that sounds fantastic. Like, I want that to exist. And it seems like we're going to get it for a week.
I think so. I mean, it sounds like if it's episodic too, that's the way that they're describing it. And if it's something that is clearly like filmed and edited. It kind of seems like I'm curious how it's going to be presented live to people, because yeah, I know he's like at the Hollywood Bowl, but I'm not sure if that's part of this or if that's a set related to it.
Is it filmed live or are they just like airing it live?
Yeah, that's sort of my question. They're just saying it's streaming live.
It seems so hard to pull off if you're airing something or like filming something live and going out all over LA. Like, that seems like a very tall order.
Yes. I think it's probably just, I think it's what you're saying is it's sort of like 10 p.m. every night for
tune in. Yeah.
You know, 4 or 6 nights or whatever. Tune in at this time to watch this for 1 week.
Although, like, also you could watch it whenever you want.
That's my question.
But that's true of all TV. So I don't know.
Right.
It's not like that.
I mean, we were just talking about the live shows, and I'm excited that this is live. I think exactly for what you're saying of like kind of treating it as John Mulaney has a late night show for a week. I like that idea, and I like the idea of tuning in for that. But my conception of Netflix live shows is just like, you know, the train wrecks, like the Love is Blind reunion that was so terrible.
Unfortunately, that's what they're known for when it comes to live.
Yeah. So is anyone excited specifically to watch these live? I just feel like I can't really imagine doing that just because I know that they've had all these technical errors. Like, I don't think I'm going to be waiting until 10 p.m. every single night to watch this when I can just watch it anytime.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's the question, is how many people are going to actually watch these things live. My personal weird obsession right now is Dinner Time Live on Netflix. Have you guys encountered this show? That's David Chang hosting a show. And I don't think I've ever watched it live, but I just have been like watching them randomly. But it's David Chang, and they air it. It happens live, and they air it live at 4 p.m. every week on like a Tuesday or Wednesday. It's a very random time, but it's like dinner time on the East Coast at 7, I think, in West Coast times. But he makes dinner, and then two comedians, usually who are, you know, sort of Netflix related comedians, sit down and talk to him and eat the food. So they did do one. If you're going to watch one, the John Mulaney, Nick Kroll episode is fantastic. So I highly recommend that. But that's another example of Netflix trying out live that I think has worked pretty well for them, but who knows, because they don't, you know, tell anyone who's watching what. But yeah, I mean, but anyway, the festival itself is just obviously packed with so much stuff, and they're definitely have a, like, there's something for everyone quality to it, in terms of types of comedy. One thing that struck me was on the Wednesday night, the 8th, which is the same night that I'm doing my live show with Mae Martin, you can see Matt Rife or Shane Gillis at the same time at different venues, which I thought was an interesting programming decision to, because I feel like there's some overlap in the audience there. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, so there's that side of things happening at the festival as well. And those two guys have obviously become, you know, huge comedians for Netflix and more broadly. You know, I think it's pretty interesting to see them doubling down, tripling down on those guys and that side of comedy with more specials. I think they each have sitcom deals with Netflix at this point. And I don't know if you guys saw Shane Gillis just put out a teaser for his show that's coming pretty soon called Tires. That's a sort of sitcom on Netflix that I don't know what you guys thought about the teaser, but it was not didn't get me super excited to see it.
Women are a totally untapped market.
For now, dude. I'm about to tap him.
Okay, none of that. No, we're going to corner the market for women.
We got a corner?
No. We need to be better at talking to women when they come in here.
I can make women comfortable.
Okay.
Easily.
Okay.
You do it. Watch.
So, hi, sir.
So,
I'd like to get an oil change.
Let's get you some lobsters and shrimp.
Why are you talking to me like that? I have a boyfriend.
You got a boyfriend? He's making you bring your car in here? Sounds like it's a little shaky.
It's not shaky.
Are you sure?
It would have to be an amazing to get me super excited. So
yeah. Well, I do think I liked his special sort of in spite of myself and more than I thought I would. And I think Sean did as well. Are you looking forward to Tires, Sean?
What, I don't know that I'm looking forward to. I think it'll be fun. I think it might actually be funnier than a lot of the sitcoms Netflix has done. What strikes me about this deal is that it's part of a larger trend of Netflix kind of adopting the comedy boom model of the 80s, where they're getting, but they've announced quite a few deals just in the last month or two with comedians for multiple specials, but then also sitcoms. Like, they just announced one with Leanne Morgan, who's made a deal for two specials, and now she's going to do a sitcom that's produced by Chuck Lorre.
That's part of the deal now on Netflix. Like, it used to be like you just get two specials. Now it's you get two specials and a sitcom.
Yeah, they also announced one recently for Tom Segura. They announced two more specials for Bert Kreischer. They obviously have, you know, both Wanda Sykes and Mike Epps with the Upshaws. It's been a long running hit for them. Fluffy Gabriel Iglesias signed up for two more specials. His sitcom Mr. Iglesias didn't quite take off, but
yeah, I missed that one.
But there's still he played a teacher. It was a classic kind of school setting, but not quite as successful as Abbott Elementary.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, there's so much to see at this festival, and you know, we'll have some coverage of it on the Daily Beast as well. Right now, I want to take a little break, and when we come back, we can talk more about sort of how Netflix got to this point of comedy dominance, or has it?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
If you're enjoying this episode and want to hear more, please make sure you are following The Last Laugh wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing to The Last Laugh, you can listen to our many episodes with the comedians who are performing at Netflix Is a Joke Fest, like Sarah Silverman, Nick Kroll, Ronnie Chang, Wanda Sykes, and more, along with everything else from our free archive. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Wednesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple and Spotify to let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to the show. Last year, I thought was notable that it was 10 years. It was the 10-year anniversary of the first Netflix stand-up special, which they were trying to make some buzz around the 10-year anniversary. And that one was Aziz Ansari's Buried Alive was the first one. It was sort of a low-key debut for Netflix comedy specials. And at the time, I remember, you know, it was not seen as just in the same way that, like, it was a big deal that House of Cards or Orange is the New Black, like, no one thought that was, you know, the place to have your show. No one thought that Netflix was the place to have a Netflix special, right, Sean?
Although, you know, like you pointed out, you know, Ted Sarandos has been a big fan of comedy from the jump. And I just want to mention, for fun fact reasons, that they put out a special back in 2005, I believe, with Zach Galifianakis live at the Purple Onion.
Yes, that was on, you know, DVD in the red envelope,
that was on,
right?
DVD when they were in the red envelopes, yeah. But you'll see Netflix executives in the room in the crowd shots of that. I think Netflix kind of stumbled into the, well, from an outside perspective, it seems like they stumbled into it. Perhaps they were like evil geniuses who knew the future was going to be this way. But by putting specials on streaming where it's available on demand anytime, they kind of tapped into this unknown demand that was out there for stand-up specials that Comedy Central, who had been dominant, wasn't fulfilling. Because Comedy Central, they would give you money, they would hype up your special for that weekend and then play it twice or three times. And then who knows when.
Yeah, I've definitely, of the many comedians I've spoken to on this show over the years, everyone who has had this sort of Netflix moment where they had their special go up and it really did change their life. It almost feels like the way people used to talk about going on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where overnight things were different. You know, I'm thinking about someone like Taylor Tomlinson with the Quarter Life Crisis special.
I am halfway through my 20s and I am done with this shit. Oh my
my God, I'm sick of my 20s. I'm so sick of people telling me to enjoy them. They're not fun. They are 10 years of asking yourself, will I outgrow this or is it a problem? Like, is this a phase or a demon? I just need to know. Like, am I fun or should I go to a meeting? Someone help me.
I think that really changed her life. And it's this thing of everyone globally being able to see you at the same time. And the Netflix audience is obviously just so huge that, you know, even if a smaller percentage of people on Netflix see your special, that's a lot of people. And yeah, the Comedy Central, on the other hand, I've heard from other comedians who just had their specials go up there and were like, I don't know, like I guess it aired a couple times. I never heard about it again, and people don't know where to stream it. I think Comedy Central finally started putting some of those on YouTube for free, which is great, but like, it's not the same. So yeah, it does seem like, you know, the Netflix effect on comedians has been pretty profound, especially in recent years.
And even 10 years later, Netflix still has a larger reach globally than any other platform. I mean, HBO and Max are still trying to introduce Max to different parts of the world. Amazon, even Amazon with Prime Video, you can only watch specials in certain parts of the world. Otherwise, you'll get this item is unavailable in your location.
Yeah, Netflix doesn't have that issue. It does. The fact that like Netflix is such a powerful place to have your special, I always like kind of wonder why it's certain comedians will move over to another platform or go with somewhere else. You know, I think we just saw Eliza Schlesinger announce that after many Netflix specials, she's doing one with Amazon. Nate Bargatze did the same thing. He did a few with Netflix and then did his most recent one with Amazon. I just assume that they're handing out huge checks. Like, there's no other really reason why that would be, right?
Well, I guess the other reason would be, I remember when Marc Maron went from Netflix to HBO a couple years ago, he cited the fact that with HBO, he would get a special status in promotion with them. Whereas when you have hundreds and hundreds of comedians, along with all of these other big shows like a Stranger Things or a Bridgerton, you get lost in the algorithm of it all. I mean, even a guy as huge as Jeff Dunham, I remember I interviewed him a year or two ago, and he told me he went back to Comedy Central, not for the money, but because he was like the number one guy on Comedy Central, whereas on Netflix, he was just another guy.
Yeah, or maybe his sensibility was kind of not of the Netflix era or something.
Are you saying Netflix is woke?
Well, no, not really. Netflix is the thing. Yeah, Netflix is not woke. It's woke and not woke, right? It's like, you can see Dave Chappelle and Hannah Gadsby on Netflix, and that's sort of they've definitely made that decision to try to be all things to all people, which sometimes works out and sometimes doesn't. I don't know, Allegra, when you're sort of like, you know, I don't know how many of these specials you're consuming on a regular basis, but do you feel like it's easy to find, you know, something to watch if you're in the mood to watch stand up on Netflix or elsewhere?
No, I mean, I think that's definitely been the problem. Like, I've talked to executives at other companies, which obviously competing companies too. So they have an interest in saying negative things about Netflix. But I think it's true that content goes to Netflix. It's really not going to get the promotion. I think a lot of the success is dependent on word of mouth or someone already having a name brand. But I almost never can find anything I want to watch on Netflix. I feel like the only stand-up specials I watch are like I already know and like the person. Like, I don't think I've ever discovered anyone from Netflix, and I think I'm
maybe if there's just like a lot, like really good word of mouth, you know, someone like Jacqueline Novak, who we had on this podcast. I mean, I sort of knew about that show, but I feel like people heard that it was good and sought it out in a way that, yeah, but if like it's just a name that you've never heard of and no one that you know has been like, this is great, you're just gonna kind of pass right by it.
What is the penis to me? What is its nature? Well, it's tender. It's responsive, you know. It springs up under certain conditions. That's why I think it has the soul of an artist, you know? It sees something that intrigues it, and it sort of it fills with inspiration. And it is a filling to me. It is a filling to me much more than it is a erection. I think erection's a little architectural for what's happening there. I don't think anyone should go in that building. I don't think it's safe. It's not up to code.
Yeah, like obviously that's not always the case. Like I was getting Nanette served to me probably immediately and forever.
But that was that was a phenomenon, right?
And I think that's like
a special case.
Yeah, Netflix wants to promote something that feels sort of unique, but the usual funny white man that maybe I would find funny, like unless he's John Mulaney, because Netflix has learned I love him, like I'm never going to know he's there.
Yeah. The HBO thing is interesting. You know, you said Marc Maron, you know, made the call to go there, which I think is a good fit for him. And for someone like, you know, Rami Youssef has done two specials with HBO now, I think. It does feel like it's still this special place. The HBO special, you know, for decades has been a big deal. And even in this Netflix era, it's still a big deal to be on HBO. And it seems like it's sort of like your special is like a little more important if you're on HBO. It stands out a little more.
Right. Netflix may have the numbers and the paychecks, but HBO still has the prestige. And that's true. That's true across the board, not just for stand-up comedy. I mean, you look at what brings home the Critics Awards each year. It's the HBO stuff. It's not the Netflix stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess Netflix is trying to change that by just putting so much into it. And as we're talking about, you know, as we were talking about with the festival, is like, let's just throw everything at the wall, get every major comedian to be part of this and really assert our dominance. But yeah, I don't know if you can undermine that HBO credibility, even if the HBO brand has been a little bit tarnished of late with the whole Max thing.
Yeah, you guys both mentioned Jacqueline Novak's special, and while it was universally loved, I hate to point this out, but if you look at the Netflix top 10 list week after week, she didn't crack the top 10.
Yeah, which is not like super surprising, given the sort of how esoteric that special is, but it did.
Right.
But, yeah, I think it played well with a certain crowd, maybe.
But what you see both with the weekly top 10 list and then last year, Netflix did that data dump where they showed you what everybody was watching on Netflix for a 6-month period. What stands out is that the people who get the numbers, whether it's in their first week of release or their first 6 months, it's the people who have the notoriety. It's the
big names.
Chappelles, it's the Ricky Gervais, it's the Jimmy Carr, it's the people who claim they're being canceled, even though they have the biggest platform on earth. Those are the people who are getting the eyeballs because people want to see what these people are going to say.
Yeah, the people who have the top specials on Netflix have to stop saying that they're getting canceled, I think, is we can all agree on that.
You can't go around apologizing for jokes. They're jokes. So I've got a plan. The next time I get canceled over a joke, the next time I upset people with a joke, I'm going to come out on the day of the cancellation. I'm going to make a statement, a public statement. I'm going to say, I've rehearsed this. I'm going to say, I'm sorry. And the people that I've offended will say, you don't really mean that apology. And I'll say, so you're saying I could say something and not mean it. Now you're getting it.
Yeah, so I mean, just kind of like looking ahead, you know, what do you guys think is sort of the future of stand-up, you know, as we're obviously seeing like a consolidation of the streaming services. And I think that could end up with Netflix as, you know, one of the only places that you can even have a special. But what do you see as sort of like the future of this medium? Sean, do you want to go first?
No.
I feel like...
Allegra, do you want to go first?
Yeah.
Thanks, Allegra.
I feel like a boring answer is TikTok, obviously, is kind of, it feels like the future of most things in media. Well, although recently Joe Biden, you know, approved a package that includes ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, having to sell TikTok or be banned. And they don't want to sell. So
yeah,
who actually
we don't
knows,
know what that means. Yeah.
Who knows where TikTok will be? But like YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, that sort of thing. That's how helped Matt Rife get popular, you know, with crowd work. I honestly think people, TikTok and then capitalizing on the success and popularity of crowd work, I can see so many newer stand-ups trying to get in that way. Like, isn't Matt Rife doing a special that is just crowd work?
Yeah, the crowd work special, which is so obvious and
right.
Dumb and like that takes zero preparation, which I guess is why he can do like two specials in 1 year if one of them you don't need to write anything for, I guess.
Exactly. But then I continue to be shocked by all the comments and the compilations just have millions and millions of views on YouTube. Like, that's the stuff that I think probably goes more viral more easily. And as you said, right, it takes literally no work. But if someone's funny, it can be funny, honestly.
I know. This is kind of a depressing, future of comedy for me personally. But, you know, I mean, you're probably right in the way that in the sense that that is what's so popular right now. And do, you know, the young people, of which maybe Allegra is one and the two of us are not, Sean, actually want to watch our plus long specials? Or is everyone just going to, you know, want to watch shorter stuff and the Netflix hour, or the stand-up hour won't be what it has been for these past many, many years?
Right. I mean, there was a period pre-pandemic where Netflix was in the business of making specials shorter and shorter. They went from hours to half hours to 15-minute specials.
15-minute ones, yeah.
Right, because they were realizing back then that people weren't watching the whole hour, so you might as well get them where you can. And then 4 years ago, we were in the start of the pandemic, and there was this wonder, just like after 9/11, of, well, can you even do comedy anymore?
Right, yeah.
And to see that we still can, and it's just getting bigger and bigger, I'd love to be optimistic, but instead what I see is comedy is just like the rest of economy, where the rich are getting richer and everybody else is fighting for the scraps. I mean, this Netflix festival has multiple arena shows, but they're all of the same ilk. You know, you mentioned Shane Gillis, Andrew Schultz, Bert Kreischer, Tom Segura. There's Kill Tony, which is Tony Hinchcliffe's kind of American Idol meets Gong show, which is playing an arena, which kind of crazy on the face of it. But there's a select group of people who have risen to become arena level acts and are getting millions of dollars a year for it. Everyone else, what do they have? They're just in this big scrum, which is why you see people flocking to the hot trend of crowd work, or what is the thing that's going to get me in the door like these other people are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a really nice dark note to end things on, and how comedy is dead. And
I don't know what you expected, Matt. I don't know what answer.
I don't know what I expected either. I don't know.
You invited us.
Something hopeful. Yeah. What was I
thinking? This was your idea.
This was a huge mistake. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm excited for the festival. I think there will be a lot of fun stuff to see, and we'll be very curious to see how those live shows come off. But this was a lot of fun, and thank you both for being here. And hopefully we can do a check-in like this sometime in the future to see if we were right or if comedy is officially dead.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, thanks so much to Allegra Frank and Sean McCarthy for joining me on this episode. You can find their writing on thedailybeast.com. And make sure to check out Sean's podcast, Last Things First, wherever you are listening to this podcast. And one last reminder, if you are going to be in LA for Netflix is a Joke Fest next week, please come check out our live taping with Mae Martin on Wednesday, May 8th. There's a link to buy tickets in the description for this episode. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple and Spotify. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Threads at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram and Threads, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes and see who is coming up next on the show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.